Hi, and welcome to M4D Advocacy Media. You're watching Journeys. I'm Mark, a co-host of Journeys. I'm a brown man with a black and white beard, black glasses, a blue checked shirt in front of a brown background.
And I'm Crystal. I have on a blue sweater today, and I have black glasses and brown hair, brown eyes, and we have a home office.
And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Solène Anglaré. And she's going to tell us a bit about her journey and what she's doing for the disability community. Hi, Solène.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. So my name is Solène. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a white woman in her mid-30s. I have long, wavy, light brown hair. And today I'm wearing a black long sleeve top and a very, very cute, I think, light purple scarf. And behind me, I have a brown background with a mirror in the middle. So, would you like me to start a
Yeah,
little bit
just go
about my
ahead.
journey? Sure. Keep on
Yeah.
rolling.
Yeah, we can tell you've
So,
watched some of the episodes. You know how it goes. Go ahead.
happy to share a little bit about my journey. So, I was born and raised in France. Growing up, I always felt really different, but I couldn't explain like why. And it wasn't visible. So, I worked really hard to hide it. I remember when I was 10 making that conscious decision of, I'm not acceptable and accepted as I am. So I need to become kind of like a chameleon. And I was observing different people and like adopting different ways of like acting to kind of try and fit in as best as I could. But I kept longing for, where do I belong? Where is my place? Where's my home? Initially, I thought it might be a physical location. So when I was 18, I moved abroad for the first time. I moved to Norway. Then I lived in the US, in the UK, in China, in Australia, back to the UK. And now I'm based in Dubai, in UAE, where I'm joining you from. And that was a mix of like studying, but also through my career. So I started in the environmental sector for a couple of years. Then I was in the travel industry for 7.5 years, hence also all the traveling. And more recently, I was working in innovation, in diversity and inclusion in innovation. And specifically, my last role there was around, it was program manager for disabled and neurodiverse innovators. So around how do we help entrepreneurs, disabled and neurodiverse entrepreneurs to start businesses, grow businesses, like really get funding for their ideas, get support. So I absolutely fell in love with that aspect of things. And in September this year, I became a freelancer. I have my own business called Be Beyond Borders, and I still do a lot of disability inclusion, neurodiversity advocacy work, etc. And the reason for that, or one of the many reasons, obviously changing the world for the better is a big one. One of the other main motivations, which is I think the case for a lot of people engaged in this space, is personal lived experience. So 2.5 years ago, I was finally, I would say finally, because it's something I knew I had in myself forever and ever, but I was finally officially diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which is a long-term mental health condition which affects a lot of things, such as distress tolerance, emotional regulation, and interpersonal relationships. And then a few months ago, I was also diagnosed with ADHD, which made a lot of sense because I'm also an artist and a writer and an entrepreneur, and I've always done 10 million things at once. So I was like, not a surprise. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and my journey.
So you've done a lot of interesting things, and at what point where you were also the 50 top influential people in the UK, correct?
Yes, it's the top 50 neurodivergent women, like most
Okay.
influential
Oh,
neurodivergent
okay.
women in the UK, yes, because of all the work that I do to raise awareness around mental health and neurodiversity specifically. I work in the UK, but also in France for different organizations, and I do a lot of public speaking, facilitating, and writing for them to raise the profile. Two of them specifically, Diversity and Ability, an amazing social enterprise in the UK, and Authentic, which is an innovation consultancy in France. So I do a lot of work with them, and also I am part of the BPD Bunch, which is a talk show podcast. We're on YouTube, Instagram, all over the place, sharing stories specifically about borderline personality disorder because it's a very stigmatized, misunderstood mental health condition, which has the highest rates or amongst the highest rates of suicide across all mental health diagnosis. So our mission is to change that and to make a difference. So these are just some of the projects that I'm getting involved in, which have led to that recognition. Obviously, it's not the reason why I do what I'm doing, but it's nice when you're recognized for, hopefully making a positive impact around me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing, and we applaud you for that.
Thanks.
But it's at like all these different labels we have, they're useful to a point, and but it would be nice if we could just have a list which is influential humans, so people doing good stuff for humanity. Instead of dividing by women and neuro, one list for women, one list for neurodivergent people, one list for whoever, right?
Maybe it's
Yeah.
because truly almost everyone has a story and
Right,
is trying to
right.
do their best. So everyone deserves to be on the list ultimately.
Yeah.
But I
You're
think to
all.
bounce off your point of the labels, I think it's a very interesting conversation which I've had with a lot of people. And it's like I see them as pieces of the puzzle that make me, like the puzzle of my identity. So they're not the whole picture. And they're the names that are used now, which doesn't mean that they will be the names that are used in the future. Like when you see the massive overlap between BPD and ADHD, for example, the two labels that I have today, you just think, are they not kind of maybe the same thing? So yeah, there's a lot of work to do in terms of like those diagnostic criteria and the validity of those. And also like the big question of like, do we maybe all have a label? Because in the end, we're all neurodiverse. Like neurodiversity literally means the diversity of brains and cognition, so the wiring of the brain. So actually everybody is neurodiverse. And today we're saying, well, some people are like more neurodiverse, so we're calling them neurodivergent. But this is based on like an illusion of a norm. What is a normal human? What is a normal brain? Actually, there isn't one. So I think we have a lot of work to do to unpack that, to accept that we're all different, and to leverage the strengths that we can
For
bring and to
sure.
support each other with our challenges at the same time.
I
Right.
think that's more. Oh, and I should clarify, I don't mean to take anything away from you or anyone else who got one of these awards. Because certainly, if in the elite circles or circles of quote unquote normal people, in which they don't make place for those people, certainly there's a need to create other awards and other spaces for people to get recognition that's valuable. I'm not sure if I was clear in when I said that, but where is that going now?
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought. You had brought up a point just now.
Maybe you were trying to say that there's a definite need for things like the word she one,
Right.
but also, for other people to recognize the other abilities of other people and to also celebrate them as much as that.
Yeah, for sure. I had another point I was going to add on to that, but maybe it'll hop back into my brain.
We'll come back.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I remember. So this idea of normal and neurodivergent, I think probably way back when a bunch of people, undoubtedly people of a certain ethnicity and a certain social class, when they got together, they probably had some internalized ableism themselves, and that some shame and some guilt that they hadn't fully processed. So they created this idea of normal so they can fit into that box. I don't know.
It could be.
Never
Yeah,
know.
I wasn't in the room for sure at that point, so I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me exactly what you said, and I think you bring a really, by the way, on sorry on and the normal in I a big air quote because I'm doing this in case you can't see me, big air quotes on that word. We actually use the word neurotypical when we talk about neurodiversity. It's neurotypical, like versus neurodivergent for the moment, but language is changing rapidly. But just to put that in context, and I think the very important point that you brought is that idea of intersectionality, the cross of our identities. So the experience of someone who is diagnosed, let's say, as neurodivergent or is self-identifying as neurodivergent with other parts of their identity, like socioeconomic background, race and ethnicity, language, education, gender, sexual orientation, etc. Like all of these different identities come into play, and fortunately, in some cases, unfortunately, in others, inform the diagnosis and the care. And the support that you're able to receive. And there's a lot of work to be done to change that because today, all of the diagnosis, especially when it comes to like autism, ADHD, they were initially created based on the experience of white boys. So they don't help us with, having that intersectional view and approach. And so many people fall through the cracks. And even if you don't fall through the cracks, then to get treatment, to get access to support is so much harder if you're at various intersections that I mentioned before. So yeah, there's a lot of work to do.
Yes. We talked in the beginning about, the many countries you've been to and the fact that we've learned through doing this that we have a lot more commonalities than we have differences. And what would you say, though, having that lived experiences of going to different places and interacting in person, what would you say are the most commonality, cut with that word, commonalities you've seen?
Commonalities.
Yeah. And then the differences as well. And maybe we also talked about health care. What are the things on that too?
Healthcare is an interesting one because I wouldn't have had the experience of a local as, being a foreigner. So it's quite complex, but in the kind of broader sense, like human beings, I think DNA wise, and correct me if I'm wrong, is 99.8% the same. So all of us are 99.8% the same, roughly. And so in 0.2 is what makes us unique. And we actually share 60% DNA with bananas, by the way. So That shows our connection with
I
nature.
saw that.
But yeah, so we're very similar. We're way more similar than we might think, like you're saying. And the way that I noticed that, in every single country and every place that I've been to, is around things like, we want to have the best life that we can have. We want to make the most of this time that we have on Earth that is very precious. We want our family and friends and loved ones to be as healthy and happy and safe and cared for
Therefore,
in the sense of the caring kindness sense of the word. That's a commonality, like every single person that I've met across the world. And
definitely.
I think we're also quite curious, and at the same time quite fearful, and that echoes emotions. We all have emotions. What's different is the way that we label and express our emotions and ourselves and our thoughts. And so culture comes into play and makes things slightly different. You will have cultures that are more individual, like in the US or in the UK, like Anglo-Saxon cultures, where you see like smaller family units and very much about the solo entrepreneur, like conquering the world and all that kind of stuff. That kind of narrative. And then you'll have collective cultures, like for example, I lived in China, so where it's all about the wider family and like the big circles and educating like children's between generations. And but then if you stand out too much, it's like, no, get back into the group. So every it's not like there is, I think, a perfect or an imperfect way. I think actually, to be fair, it's humans trying to figure out how to be human. So it's always going to be slightly imperfect anyway, because none of us are perfect. And when it comes to healthcare, again, everywhere has its differences and its challenges. In growing up in France, like for sure, like I had a family doctor that followed me, my whole childhood. I mean, that's very special. I realized when I moved to the UK that you're at a clinic and you can see any doctor at any time, which is better because if the doctor is on leave, then you have no doctor. But I mean, you have the replacement or replacement maybe back in France, but in rural areas, it's not always easy. But then it also means like you don't really have that like follow-up and that like personal relationship. So again, it's pros and cons. And in France, like mostly free. In the UK, NHS is free, but obviously lots of waiting times. Like for a BPD diagnosis, if you wait for the NHS, so the public diagnosis, it's about 2 years waiting list. And knowing that, I talked before about the suicidal rates that, 7 in 10 will attempt and 1 in 10 will complete, you think, whoa, 2 years? Like, how do you have people in this kind of stress waiting 2 years? So I ended up going the private route, which obviously is a massive privilege that I could, do that. So yeah, it's, yeah, pros and cons everywhere. And I think, like I said, we're all trying to help each other somehow, but we don't always get it right.
I really do wish though that people could, because I think on a very smaller scale, these conversations were being had, but people like us weren't included in those. And so, I think if now that we have a lot more heads together and a lot more people are able to come to this table in this way, maybe not so much physically, but anyway,
I
I
just want to
think
bounce off
somebody's
that
going to
because
figure
I,
out how to put all these
yeah.
pros and cons together and make a better
Yes.
situation healthcare wise. In a lot of ways, they're going to help figure out a lot of things that are not bright or not going great or whatever.
I thought COVID was like the perfect opportunity to do that because it was like a global crisis and everyone was facing, a very similar challenge across borders at the same time. And I'm always thinking like, how can we increase like collaboration across borders? But even then, lots of countries had completely different strategies, approaches, understanding from a healthcare point of view. So there's a lot of work to do. And sorry for interrupting, I wanted to bounce off something you said because it made me think about that expression, we say nothing about us without us. And I love that. And at the same time, I think it's not ambitious enough because I think it should be nothing without us, full stop. Doesn't have to be about us. Like we should be able to input and be asked for inputs across all topics of society and the future of humanity and all of it.
Whether it's related to us or not, with the understanding that people with disabilities in general have more empathy and might be able to see things that other people might not.
Yeah, and
Or
problem
they
solving
just don't have,
abilities as well.
or they just don't have the ex lived experience to know those situations. So how
Exactly.
can you expect them to know those things unless they hear it like what we're talking, how we're talking, and or they hear other things, But you can't expect somebody just to know things without that,
Even within our community, like there are so many differences, there's so much diversity. Like, I can't know what it's like to have a physical disability, for example, and to use a wheelchair or a mobility aid. I don't have that lived experience. So I'm always like constantly seeking, like meeting people in the community, like asking them and just learning all the time. Like I was working just the other day on writing a report for a client, which is about, events, technology to make events more accessible and inclusive. Well, of course, I can write a lot about the neurodiversity experience and, thinking about the five senses and how people's senses might be like overstimulated in different ways. But for the physical access, I need to rely on my colleagues who have that lived experience because there's only so much that I can offer as an ally, like, my knowledge doesn't expand to, having really lived through, going to an event and facing all the physical barriers. So I think it's really important even within our community to share our stories with each other and learn from each other rather than just think, oh, I can talk for everybody, That's not the
Yeah,
case.
for sure. We have to be able to be an example for, talking to other people with disabilities that have nothing to do with ours, for other people to be comfortable enough to talk to other people that have disability, the general public that doesn't, they're able body, And when they see that we're comfortable doing it, and we can do it cordially, then maybe they'll do the same.
Yeah, actually, able-bodied is something in the UK. So again, language, right? Everyone has different language. In the UK, we don't say able-bodied. It's seen as like a word that implies that, disabled people don't have a body that is able to do certain things. So we use non-disabled. But yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because like in the US, for example, people say people with disabilities, but then in the UK, people say disabled people. It's like really hard to keep up on a, being like taking that back to your question about the international like differences. There are a lot of differences around language. Like in France, we say person in a situation of disablement. It's like it takes 15 hours to, if you give a talk, you have to. So yeah, it's like yeah, every language is different, but yeah, I just wanted to share that.
Where was it that they used people of determination?
That's the least thing.
That's
In
in the
Kenya, right?
UAE. Yeah, it's where I am now. It's
And
in
I believe
the.
one of her other guests also said they're using that in Dubai, right?
Yeah.
Dubai is in
Yes,
the
yes.
UAE.
Yes, so the UAE is made of different emirates, and Dubai is one of them. So that's where I live now since the last 3 weeks. And yeah, people say people of determination. Yes, people of determination. And it's written everywhere on the signs and things like that. Personally, I don't understand it. I'm looking forward to meeting someone locally who can explain to me like how did that come about? Because I'm like, what are they trying to say? Like, we need to be determined to like interact with the world, or we are determined by what?
Well,
Like,
on
I
the
just
surface,
don't get it.
curious.
yeah, it's on the surface when you first hear it, you think, oh, because we are German people, we are adaptable, and we have to do a certain amount of work to get through life. And then you think on the surface, yeah, it sounds great that someone's recognizing that. And like, I mean, everyone English.
So kind of sounds like a term somebody gave us rather than
We gave ourselves.
yeah.
Yes.
I've never really
Yeah.
we've never really talked about it. We
Yeah.
only a tiny bit, like that's kind of cool, but then we're like, wait a second,
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
and it's like, I guess with language, it's like understanding the meaning. So I feel it's hard to comment because I wasn't in the room when they decided on that term and who was there, right? And what is the intended meaning? Because I, right now, until now, I don't really understand what they're actually trying to say and if it's positive or not. So I will keep you posted as I meet more people here and learn more about, what, how it came about. Hopefully I can bring some more insights.
So we were in our preset. Okay,
Rediscussion.
start over. In
Rediscussion.
our pre-discussion, we were also discussing, we were just talking about the wordage used and stuff like that. We were also discussing, the fact that people are fussing about all this wordage when I feel like, as a disability community, part of that, that we need to be demanding one thing at a time. Let's get people used to not using so much ableism before we start changing wordage, and let's deal with one thing at a time and not overwhelm society or
Yeah,
societies.
if they feel so, if we constantly try and pick apart language without first maybe explaining the ethos or why we need them to change their behavior, which eventually leads to language, then it's kind of we're not addressing the right problem, maybe.
It's interesting, right? Because I feel like, I mean, I've been thinking about this for a long time. I kind of feel like it's a chicken and egg story in a way. Like language influences behaviors and actions, and actions influence behaviors and language as well. Like it's all intertwined. So on the one hand, I agree that, let's not have that kind of cancel approach, like, oh, you use the right word, so you can't say this, you can't say that, of course. And at the same time, I think still like be willing to, you know, share like, oh, I learned that this word is more inclusive, or at least. So I
Yeah.
think it's like finding that balance. So,
Balance.
and I think it comes back to the environment we create around language. So basically, I'd rather people talk about disability and neurodiversity than not at all, for sure. Even if they use the wrong terminology
Correct.
or a
Yeah.
terminology that isn't very inclusive, because I don't think there is really truly right or wrong, but that, you know, is less inclusive. And at the same time, too, like I think it's about creating the environment in which people are like feeling super comfortable to talk about the topic, and also be willing to be you know, challenged in the way that they talk about it. And like, if I use, for example, a terminology that isn't inclusive, you know, please tell me, first of all. And I really want people to, anyone that hears it, to tell me, because I'm still learning. Even I've been in this space for a while now, and I'm still learning, and language continues to evolve. And so I'm totally open to like being told, hey, like, I've learned that this is not the most inclusive way that you can say this. Here is a different way, you know, that people in the community prefer. And I'm like, cool. And then I just, for if you are ever challenged like this and you feel, oh, this is it, I'm never talking about this again. No, this is not the point. The point is to say, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't know, and I will change the next time, and then really actually change. And that's it. It can be as simple as that if we create that safe learning environment where everyone feels welcome to make mistakes, and, you know, and grow and learn and change and apologize and move on. And yeah, I think that's the important point.
Exactly. And it's important to understand as well that it's a generational thing. If they were taught that's the correct usage in their time, and they are just, that's been internalized and it just comes out automatically. And, you know, sometimes if they're older, they're, it's going to be much harder. But I
Yes.
know a lot of younger people are more flexible in taking what you're talking about, and you know they want to understand, but it's easier to more generation than an older generation.
Yes, it's true.
This old model of, I went to school, I got an education, therefore I'm an expert in this, and this, that's not gonna lead anywhere. Or, I've left school, so my education's done. That's generally the wrong way to go.
Yeah. We
Yeah.
learn all the time from each other, from different sources, from books, from so many different places, from traveling, from so many different ways. So,
Right.
absolutely, I totally agree with you. Like, it's an ongoing process of learning and educating ourselves. I just wanted to say, actually, that also, you know, our brains are, through like neuroplasticity, continue to evolve throughout our lives. So yes, maybe when we're older, it's a little bit more difficult to adopt like different ways, or like, you know, but it's possible. It's possible. Like, our brains are still malleable. We can still learn new things all throughout our lives.
But it starts with the conscience. Like, we definitely know of older people who are like that, but it takes much more conscious effort. Like, the farther you're removed from that learning stage of your life, that student mentality, the harder it gets.
And then going back to the whole wordage thing, if we spend all our time worrying about the wordage of things, then you're going to have people, like I said, be overwhelmed with what we're asking for. You know, this is, you know, Not to say that these things should not have, just on a human level, that we should not have already had these things in place, and that people just need to be treated like all over the world as humans and with the same rights, and health care as well. But no, I was getting to if we stay on that trajectory of no, you're saying it wrong. You're doing, I don't like that word. I, and it comes up to like a verbal battle, and people are going to shut down and not have these conversations because they're like, I don't like that. That's a division thing. And I'm not even going to go there. I'm just going to shut down. So, I mean, that's what I mean when I say, like, we've got to not worry so much about the wordage raised.
Yeah, no one's gonna listen to this us if they don't feel we're on their team or we're part of the same team. Yeah, it's sometimes you have to make some what's the word I'm looking for? Some
Concessions.
concessions, right? Like maybe you have a big dinner and invite some people who have different points of view and casually discuss things. Like we're doing here, and get together, move forward some way. But if you're not even in the same room and talking to each other because you don't have the same views and therefore you can't get along, then nothing's gonna happen.
Yeah, then we're all in echo chambers talking to ourselves or to our small like inner group. So I agree. I think it's important to broaden the circle, the conversation, ideally make a humanity-wide circle. I mean, that's how I, dream of seeing things like the way that I'd love for things to go. And I think that echoes back to creating that safe space, that safe learning environment where people can use whatever words and just engage in the conversation. While at the same time, I will keep insisting because I think, again, it's also a balance because language is so powerful. Words define our thoughts or
Definitely.
emotions, like they connect us with each other. Words have such an incredible power, and there are some small tweaks that we can easily make that will make people feel more respected and included, and validated in their lived experience. I'll give you an example, right? A lot of people say, oh, you suffer from borderline personality disorder. And, for me, like that is horrendous. Like, of course, having BPD is not like easy peasy every day. Of course, it, gives you major like mental health challenges, and is really difficult to cope with. And at the same time, like, it's, I now see it as a gift, having been through treatment, and it makes me who I am, and I wouldn't want to trade it. Well, actually, I wouldn't even know who I am without it. So I prefer to say living with BPD or having BPD because it is part of my identity. It makes me, me alongside lots of other things that are part of me. And it comes with strengths too. Like that hyper emotionality you talked before, Crystal, about empathy. It makes me very empathetic and loving and caring of people. And also that hypersensitivity to events and hyperreactivity makes me really good in a crisis. Like if something really bad happens, I'll be like, whoa, like fired up, right? So there are some sort of benefits, strengths that come with some of our biggest challenges. So yeah, let's not say suffer from. And that's just the one example where I don't think it's that hard not to. So
Yeah, no,
hopefully.
I get that because definitely people have used it for, well, for me, What about you?
I've heard that batted around in different places, different conversations. Generally, that's you'll hear that from like older people who obviously have they've been raised on the medical model of disability. And so it's language like suffering from, or you'll hear lots of what's wrong with you questions and stuff like that.
So like I get it. I get, I'm gonna answer the question and I'm gonna be engaging with it, but I don't like it. I'm like,
Exactly.
when they ask me, well, what are you suffering with? Well, nothing.
Nothing.
It's
Your
my
question is
thought.
what I'm suffering with. Imagine
Yeah.
if you responded that to them. Your question is my suffering.
Yeah, there we go.
And then, I mean, obviously, some people are kind of receptive more than others, but some people, when you question their language, they, they will get offended that you're questioning their the way they offended you kind of thing, and it turns into sort of a kind of tennis match or something.
I'm okay with offending people like that, though, to be honest. I think you can't truly bring and make change if you don't ruffle a few feathers. So, obviously, with respect and kindness always. But yeah, I'm okay with, being a bit brave
Yeah,
sometimes.
I think you and I have a lot of the same, like, we don't mind empathetically, like, explaining it to people, like, but at the same time is like, oh, and
Yeah.
sometimes, and some people also is acceptance of you and getting over your disability. And if they're gonna take in what you have to say and really listen and really, really try to hear you, that's gonna make a huge difference. And talking to people who think they're better than you and know more than you, and they're not gonna be receptive to any of that. So why even try? So it definitely makes a difference of your, who you're engaging with.
I think of it as like a snowball effect. So you start with the people who are already a little bit interested, a bit receptive. Maybe they know someone that is, dealing with a similar challenge topic, whatever it may be, diagnosis, whatever the story may be. And then, you just hope that these people will then snowball to the people they know and who trust them. And yeah, so and again, it's that balancing between, being assertive enough, but also being like educational in a kind way. Like it is difficult, but you can adjust the way you communicate to be most effective whilst not losing your authenticity. It truly is possible, and I think learning these skills can be so helpful to hopefully, with the snowball effect, eventually change minds. And the snowball always starts with the person holding it, and that's us as well. And you talked before, Mark, about the internalized ableism, and I am still unpacking that. I think it is a lifelong journey to actually, if you're honest with yourself, to start with you in terms of realizing like all of that internalized view of disability. And even like in the neurodiversity community, I keep hearing like lots of people saying, well, I'm neurodiverse, I'm not disabled. And it's like, well, are we ranking now? Like, is there, like, for me, we need to change the stigma and across the whole board of all of our community in the larger sense. Like, a really important thing is to work on our own internalized ableism. And unfortunately, I hear a lot of people in the neurodiversity community making comments like, oh, I'm neurodiverse, I'm not, or I'm neurodivergent, I'm not disabled. And for me, I'm just like, we should be working in terms of like breaking the stigma across the board and coming together as like a wider community. Like, why do we feel the need to do that? Well, if anything, it's showing that internalized ableism again. So yeah, something to really work on is, looking inward and unpacking all those layers. Yeah. Similarly, like when I got diagnosed at the beginning, I was like, I'm never talking about this to anybody apart from my husband and my parents, and that's it. Nobody has to know. This is like top secret, especially employers and, and obviously now it's changed because I tell everyone and anyone. But that was my own internalized ableism and all of the shame that came with, oh, at the time, I saw myself as a broken human, whereas now I just think, oh, I'm just different. And, this is what it means to me to be in this way. And right now it has this label, but maybe in 100 years there'll be like another label for this. Doesn't really matter,
We aspire a lot to bring to the disability community and other viewers as well, and listeners, the tools to be able to unlearn that internalized ableism. And through these conversations, and why we are effectively, hopefully, having conversations that are helping people rationalize why that's not a good idea to use that phrase or those words or whatever. So, slowly but surely, hopefully that's gonna be a thing. And I mean, it's not just our podcast. There's a bunch of other disabled people like yourself that are doing the same thing and trying to help people, through these cordial conversations, doing the same thing. So we appreciate you doing that.
Thank you. Yes, I do. I have a talk show called The Inclusion Conversation, which is a
Yeah.
live or it's yeah, it's conversations like this with an audience, and yeah, everybody's welcome, and we talk about different topics around disability and neurodiversity to explore and learn from each other and share stories. And I think you're right. I think there's a real power in sharing stories, in talking to each other, and hopefully in leading to that learning, unlearning, relearning. The unlearning I've found
Yeah.
personally, at least, is the hardest part, because sometimes it goes so deep into your subconscious that you're not
Right.
even able to like access that part until it shows
Right.
up somehow in your life, and you're like, why do I believe this
Where did
about
that
myself
come
or
from?
about other people or
Yeah.
about how the world works? And yeah, it
Right.
almost catches you by surprise sometimes. You're like, what?
That's
No.
not who I am. So, where did
Yeah,
that come from? Yeah.
exactly.
So you talked about the inclusion conversation.
Conversation.
What other projects are you working on?
Ooh, so many. So I'm doing a lot of freelance work with different organizations. Then I'm developing my own offering via my business, Be Beyond Borders, which is going to be a series of workshops around the topics of identity and belonging, because I think it's really hard to know like who you are in this world. And we were talking about unlearning and all of these endeavors. So I'm creating workshops around that. And then I think we do have a belonging crisis that we're in, because we've never been so connected and yet so disconnected. So yeah, the idea is these very experiential in-person workshops, mixing art, poetry, and self-inquiry and connection with community. So to be launched in Dubai, hopefully next year once I find my footing here. And then the
Exciting.
third set of projects that I'm working on, in addition to the freelance and to my own business, is all of the artistic projects. So I'm working on a music album with a friend of mine. So
Wow.
I write lyrics and she writes the music. Our group is called Excessive, Xsiv, and it's music for the emotionally sensitive and a little bit extra. It's going to be the first album is going to be touching on the nine symptoms of borderline personality disorder, plus
Awesome.
some other songs.
So
And I'm
keep
also
us
working on a short
updated.
film and a
Oh,
couple of
wow.
novels and yeah, doing all the traveling
Busy
and yeah, so
lady.
oh, and I'm doing a yoga teacher training course. So yes, I'm very
Wow.
I'm very active. I think that's the ADHD part of me. I always like to have lots of things going on. It just brings me joy. So I used to think, oh, again, it's that formatting, right? I need to pick one thing. I need to do one thing. I need to focus. I need to stay in a job. And then now I just let it go. I'm like, this is who I am, and I'm embracing it. I'm doing all the projects, and if half of them don't see the light of day, that's okay. There will be other ideas.
Yeah. So, Dennis, is there like a website people can keep up with all this information? And also, is your podcast on there as well?
Yes, so you can find me on the BeBeyondBorders.com. That's B-E Beyond Borders. That's my website, and it's also my handle for YouTube, where all the previous videos of the inclusion conversation are. And also same thing for Instagram at BeBeyondBorders. So yeah, it'd be awesome to connect with
Awesome.
anyone and everyone interested in these topics
Awesome.
that we've covered.
Yeah, we have a resource page. We'd love to add you to it, your website, so everybody that needs it can go to your website and
Thank
listen
you.
to your podcast maybe too.
Thank you. Actually, with the first episode of the second season, which was so January,
Oh,
February
wow.
this year, was about the language of disability, which is something we've talked about a lot with two amazing
Yeah.
guests. So if anyone's interested in that topic, there's definitely an episode on that.
Yeah. And what was that called again? The podcast?
The inclusion conversation.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have no idea. So, thank you, Salim, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. How was that?
Good. You have a, yeah, it's morning there now, right?
No,
Oh
I
no,
think it's about
it's
10.
9:20 p.m.
Oh wow. So okay, have a good evening then.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Have a
Bye.
nice day. Bye.